welcome to Data Science Perspectives. This series focuses on analytics and data science professionals from across industry to learn about how their career unfolded, what skills they look for when hiring, and what trends they think are coming next. I'm your host, Bill Franks. Let's get to it. Welcome to this episode of Data Science Perspectives. I'm your host, Bill Franks. Today we're going to be joined by Mike Stefanik. He's currently a managing director with EY's Risk Practice. I first met Mike years ago when he was with SAS, and he's been a fixture in the analytics community here in Atlanta for quite a number of years now. More recently, he's been kind enough to donate his time to be a guest judge and give students feedback on their presentations in my master's capstone class. So it's really been great to work with him in that context recently. He focused very early in his career in on that finance and risk area. He started with jobs both at Fifth Third Bank and SunTrust. He took that experience to lead the SAS Enterprise Risk Analytics practice for several years before moving on to both IBM and then Equifax to help them implement their own risk solutions. For the past 7 years or so, he's co-led the EY Digital Risk and Advanced Technologies practice, working with large companies to address their own risk needs. He also volunteers with organizations like the United Way and the Boy Scouts, and he has a degree in business from Penn State, as well as an MBA from Ohio State. And with that, let's welcome Mike to the show. Hey, Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be here, Bill. Really appreciate you having me on.
And I appreciate you taking the time. I know as people will hear as we go through the discussion here, you're a pretty busy guy these days. And the thing I like about your background is I've had people with different backgrounds on the show so far. You've been really deep in the area of risk and finance, particularly compared to others that I've interviewed. And that is an area of analytics that's continuing to grow, and that's obviously important, but it's not quite as common. So what drew you into that area of risk, and particularly risk and as it relates to finance? And then what's kept you there for now many years?
Yeah, no, I appreciate the question. So, I mean, it's an interesting journey by myself. You know, when I was first exposed to risk and finance data, it was actually back in college, right? We had a professional speaker series come in. One of the big data providers came in and really spent a lot of time walking us through the level of data. And I was completely fascinated by that, right? I didn't realize at that time that you could measure beyond credit worthiness, types of purchases, things that were happening, those kind of things. So that kind of set the stage, right? As I went through my career and was able to tie it back to credit risk, and then take this evolution a number of years ago into tying it into also non-financial risk and now seeing how these two worlds come together, that's what's really kept me here, right? Because in the end of the day, you know, what I really like is this intriguing problem that, one, you can model behaviors. Two, there's data that's structured out there very much in what's been going on for this kind of credit risk world. But now more importantly, kind of the next horizon is this kind of non-financial world where you can also start to model this cause and effect relationship around issues, complaints, other types of data. Right. And this actually all converges into how businesses would manage themselves, both in the financial services side and both outside of financial services. Pervades insurance, pervades healthcare, pervades a number of different industries. So I just find the entire thing intriguing.
Yeah. And the breadth of your experience in the sense of, you know, I've known you for a number of years now across a couple of the jobs you've had, but you're interesting in that you've had client-side experience working for a company that does this, you've had consulting-side experience like you're doing now, and you've had product-side experience working in a company that had products in this space. What are your thoughts on the differences as you think about your career between doing what you do in those three disparate environments?
Yeah, no, actually, that's a really interesting question. If you would have asked me this question 10 years ago, I would have said between the client side, you know, like you said, basically the data side, right? Then the product side, sorry, the client, the consulting, and then the product side, that there were distinct differences, right? But I think what's happened over the last 10 years, you know, since you and I have, you know, really known each other, there's been a convergence there, right? So in the one thing that I find intriguing about it is you see that even though each has a lens, right, that obviously the client side is approving credit or managing non-financial risk or, you know, reserving capital against a risk based on scenarios that they've modeled, right? Consultants tend to come in and consult on that. Hey, here's some best practices. Here's a way to do that. Here's techniques for that, right? And then ultimately there's the platform players that say, gee, we can do this more efficiently. There's a huge convergence across all three of those lanes, right? Meaning that in order to be a really effective consultant, you know, as we are today, as I am today, you really need to have that background from both sides. And, you know, what's really going to happen, I think, in the next 5 years is you'll see a lot of the platform and consulting side come together very quickly, right? That'll be driven by clients saying, look, I really do need that efficiency, right? I need not so much what we would view as traditional consulting behavior. Come in, do a gap analysis, give me recommendations, let's have findings, right? But be that consulting firm that can fuse those areas together and help some of the customers think through not only what's best in industry, but how to adopt that very quickly, right? Because it's this kind of speed to analytics, speed to managing risk, and then more importantly, are you, you know, not over-reserving, under-reserving, are you understanding emerging risk? And then maybe to expand your question a little bit more, also, what do I need to think about outside of the traditional risk I measure? What are emerging risk, right? What's coming in the marketplace that maybe I'm not looking at, right? Pandemic, right? You know, regional wars, right? All these things probably weren't on people's radars 3 to 5 years ago.
I like your point about that convergence, and it intrigues me from this perspective. I think some of the software, if you're trying to separate the products that are managing risk today, they're so complicated and specialized in certain areas that it's not like installing Excel on your laptop and it just runs. I mean, inherently, you almost have to have a good dose of expertise and consulting support to implement and customize those for your purposes. And I think that's always been somewhat true. I remember the early days of CRM systems. There was always some customization, but a lot of times that customization was really, let's say, some data grunt work. It wasn't the substance of what you were going to do with the app versus, I think, some of these risk things today. To get the substance of what the app does still requires a lot of complicated decision making and tuning and back and forth. And so that's an interesting point about that convergence.
Yeah, I think it's really kind of the new frontier, right? Because, you know, where I spend a lot of time and you know, where the industry is converging is we're all going to end up living in and use the word app, right? I'll just extend that slightly to ecosystem, right? Because you do see a lot of the major software providers now evolving what they do to cover multiple disciplines, right? 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you and I would be talking maybe more specifically about a domain within risk, right? Whether it's enterprise risk or op risk, credit risk, right? We go down that. Now, a lot of firms, clients are saying, look, I need to look across these horizons. They're creating ecosystems that you can live in that start to aggregate that data, that grunt work that you talked about. And really where, you know, we're seeing the horizon, we spend a lot of time in consulting, is really being able to help to plug in not only the data that you should harvest, but the outcomes and the analytics you would like to see from that, right? So how do you refine those very quickly? And how do you standardize those, right? And so it can live within a broader ecosystem. And again, you know, clients can get value out of that quickly. And be able to run through those scenarios, those risk scenarios we talked about just a little bit ago.
Well, one thing too, you focused on the technology side of risk analytics as much as the you know, the pure algorithmic side. So, you know, as it relates to the work you've done, what have been some of the highest impact technology advancements that have moved the space forward in the past couple of years?
Yeah, unfortunately, I may sound like every other consultant out there, but really, AI and machine learning, you know, really has advanced, you know, the whole field, right? You know, and, you know, as you all know, you teach it, you know, we live it every day. You know, regression models, you know, probability models, you know, have been out there for a long time. You know, the science is well understood. And there was a lot of really smart people that helped put together a lot of the, you know, original as we highlighted before, credit default models, operational risk models, kind of loss models that you would take a look at. What machine learning and artificial intelligence has done to the field is really brought in an effective challenge into tuning the parameters that go into those models, along with then the ability to bring in data that isn't as curated as tightly as, you know, what was out there just, as I said, you know, probably 7-10 years ago, but also allows you to now to add more data to the mix of those models, run more scenarios, see what the outcomes are, trend those outputs, and then benchmark in real time, right? That's all done through AI, machine learning, and then the data intelligence underneath that, the data aggregation, in order to feed into those processes.
And so that's the algorithm side. And then to support that, two big trends, you know, obviously big data slash new, you know, new data as much as big data, that's probably been feeding some of these. And then, you know, the cloud as a technology and a platform that is supporting those. How have the cloud, the rise of the cloud impacted the way that you're deploying and managing the risk frameworks these days?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I think it's done, and let's pick on the cloud first, right? The real advantage to the cloud is it shortens the time that you can spin up an environment, right? And you can get to an analysis. The second side of that is it's changed the cost equation, right? So there is a savings in the compute side of that. There's a savings in the data and the data storage, right? So, you know, where you know previously you would spend more time thinking about those investment costs. Not that you're not going to think about them, but they are a lot more ubiquitous, right? Easier to attain, and the cloud allows you to run multiple scenarios and store more data, right? What that also allows you to do with cloud technology and the way you can actually aggregate and bring data together then is you can just collect and store more data. Right. So, you know, back to what we talked about in terms of feeding the algorithms, the cost of doing that is much, much lower. The ability to do that is easier. And then the outcome of that is that you can spend more time driving through scenarios to understand where the risk would lie, you know, within your firm. And that's all been enabled by the cloud, along with the change in some of the standardization and some of the analytical software that sits there. So you and I have previously talked about R and Python, you know, where we may have lived only in a SaaS world in the past. Now there's a lot more set of tools out there that are also very cost effective, right? That can open that up to more analysts to model more risk and do that in a way that it's not only done by a few specialists, but it can actually then be put out at the point of consumption in a business unit. Right, so a business unit can tie risk specialists to a process, right, and do that in more real time and maybe have oversight from a central risk group, right? That's really been the significant change. And again, the cloud has allowed all that to happen because you can stand up multiple points along that journey and process.
One thing I'd be curious about is some of the risk analytics and risk processes that you need to implement involve some incredibly, incredibly sensitive data. And I know that, you know, some industries are regulated to that are having more difficulty, you know, getting to the cloud in a way that they feel is safe. Are you finding that there's companies where some of the risk work is done on the cloud, but some of the risk work is actually having to be kept inside their organization because of the sensitive nature of the data that they have to analyze and assess?
Yeah, absolutely, Bill. I mean, it's, and it's also to your point, regulation has a big impact in that space, right? So, you know, very much so in financial services, very much so on the healthcare side, you know, which it should be, right? You know, that, you know, individuals and, you know, firms do need their data protected. And so that's been very key. You know, there is a move towards using, you know, hybrid cloud environments, highly encrypted cloud environments, dedicated cloud environments within those four walls to get that same economic benefit for the ability to, one, stand up kind of multiple analytics nodes and data collection nodes and then put those out. And there's also, you know, been an advancement in just data anonymization and being able to look at data patterns without having to look at the actual individual data. Right? Do we need to look at Bill's data and Mike's data, or can I look at representations of Bill and Mike, right? Can I create synthetic data on top of that, right? And can I use that to model some of the same patterns that I might actually see within those highly restricted and very sensitive data sets, right? So that level of data, it really in the last probably 4 years or so, maybe five, has really kind of also opened up the ability to bring new insights out in highly regulated industries.
It's interesting you mentioned the you know, simulated data. There's a graduate of our program, one of our PhDs, who started a company, and they're applying statistical algorithms to help anonymize data in the sense of, let's say you gave it a real transaction file that has real data. You define the dimensions that the data has to be representative of the pattern there, and they'll anonymize it or randomize it in such a way that the distribution of the final data is identical statistically to where it started, but it's been mixed up enough that you actually can no longer tie it to any given individual. I think that's going to be an interesting.
I really think that's one of the horizons, right? Because there's, you know, is that every firm knows, right? And there's been a lot of consulting firms that have, you know, written papers about this, white papers. There's a lot of tremendous value in the data, right? You know, that are within, you know, any firm's four walls. The ability is to what you hit on is, you know, can that data both be used very efficiently internally to manage risk, right? But the one of the other topics that a lot of people really don't talk about, but it is very prevalent in the industry, is the sharing of data across firms, across industries, so that risk can be measured, right, you know, in risk stripes, you know, across various firms, across various geographies, right? You know, you'll see a fair amount of that on the operational risk world that's been out there for a while. Obviously, credit risk, right, was one of the first ones in sharing individuals' data and protecting that correctly, right, so that you can measure credit risk across, you know, both sectors and trending and those pieces, right? You'll continue to see that, right? So the ability to take some of the core attributes that were protected by regulations, potentially protected by anonymization, now can be modeled and protected by a synthetic or simulated data, as you highlighted, Bill.
Well, as you look back at your career, what is one of the traits that you think you have that's really helped you to be successful in this space?
You know, I think the biggest trait, you know, and I share this with everybody, is I like to continuously learn, right? You know, it's the old adage, you know, I think the more you learn, the more you understand you don't know. And, you know, you and I participate, you know, in a class at Kennesaw, and, you know, and that's great. You know, and even at that level, you know, kind of a master's capstone class, you know, you realize that there are a lot of things that you either need to make sure that you're continuing, you know, to stay sharp on, or for me, it sparks more new ideas in terms of, you know, really, you know, what is the possibility, right? You know, yeah. You know, what do you learn next? And so I would say keep learning. The second thing I would also share with folks is, especially in the risk world, is that you never want to remain behind the technology curve, right? The technology curve will always change. And that's a good thing. And as the technology curve changes, what it generally does is it'll shorten the data acquisition time. It'll lower the cost, like you and I talked about. And then it'll allow you to even further standardize and abstract the analysis, right? If you look over a number of different technologies, that pattern repeats itself, right? So being able to understand when that curve's changing and being able to figure out when to apply it is absolutely key, because we're literally doing things today that, you know, with, you know, a handful of people that, you know, would have taken teams, armies of folks 10 years ago.
Well, what's one thing that when you look back to, you've really learned the hard way. One thing, if someone had told you this fact before you started working, would have saved you a lot of pain. And this could really help our students out as they look to get into a career.
This fact, you know, and you're, you know, I thought a lot about this question when you kind of shared me the pre-list. I guess the fact that really would have, you know, kind of prompted me along was, and I'm going to take it back to that kind of change, right? You know, don't necessarily be focused on the change, but learn to adopt the change, right? And so, you know, as the students come in, and as a consultant, right, I help people navigate change, right? So, you know, the one fact I guess out there is that change is going to be continuous, and that, you know, whether you're a student, you're 20 years into your career, you know, or, you know, you're past 20 years, like you and I are in our careers. You know, I think the key thing is that being able to continuously adapt to that change, like I talked about, is key, right? And that's something that, you know, kind of originally growing up, you know, and focused on, you know, both kind of a business math and a science background, you tend to look at things in very concrete perspectives, right? You know, you're going to go and you're getting a PhD and you'll specialize in something, right? You'll get your master's and you think you're going to know it, you know, and consume it all. And that's just the starting point, right? You know, so that's one of the things I'll leave your students with. I've always made a commitment to myself that if I'm not essentially re-educating myself every 10 years in something substantial, right? So it's another degree, right? It could be go get another master's, you know, it could be spending time with you in the PhD program, you know, or attaining, you know, a number of, you know, certifications and actually making that a big, you know, kind of milestone moment for myself. You know, I think I'm not progressing as I should. So that's something I'd also leave your students. You really, really want to kind of plan out, you know, the fact that you're going to continue to learn and hit, you know, these kind of education refresh skill milestones.
I think your comment on change is an interesting one because, I mean, let's face it, things have changed so drastically. I think, you know, like me, your first job was probably running analytics on a mainframe. Right. Everything has changed so drastically. And if I were to go now and tell the story of my career as it progressed from A to Z, it would make sense. And it would seem like it was a good plan and like it all made a lot of sense. But in reality, at any point in time, I actually had no idea what was coming next. And, you know, an opportunity would arise. I say, that sounds like an interesting job. I think I'll go do that. Or I turned down a job that, you know, later maybe, you know, I wish I had or I was glad I hadn't. But The point is, when you look back in history, a lot of times it feels like it was kind of linear and kind of predictable. But in analytics, I think some of these trends, even big data, it seems so obvious now. But when it first hit, it really was a little bit
exactly right.
Shocking to the systems because people had standardized, very manageable data sets for a while that had we'd matured everything about them. And then suddenly, boom, in a year or two, all of everything you knew has to be challenged again. And so it's been exciting. It's what's kept it interesting for me. But at the same time, you're right. You've got to be prepared and ready mentally to deal with that, what's really constant unknown and change if you're going to have a successful career.
Yeah. And I think that's really, you know, I think that's something that, you know, especially, you know, something you want to embrace. And as I said, the one key takeaway that I've had, you know, even though the technology gets more complex, the outcomes actually become more simple, right, in terms of getting to that outcome. Now, you and I could probably have a whole other podcast on, you know, has the standardization and, you know, codification of analytics in the large platforms made the analytics better or worse, right? You know, and right, that's a whole other topic, right, that I think we can go down, right? Analytics for the masses, right? Yeah. Is it as good as, you know, handcrafted, you know, PhD, you know, well-tested analytics? You know, and I think there's a case for both, but in the data-driven world we live in today, right, I think just being able to adapt and change navigate is just going to be key.
So I think we've spent a lot of time kind of looking back. So let's finish off with a quick look forward. As you look out the next 3 to 5 years, is there anything that in your mind looks to be a big trend coming our way, whether data science in general or as it ties specifically to risk?
Well, the good thing about risk is, you know, it's always there, right? You know, and so I think, you know, one thing I'll answer both ends of your questions. You know, I think firms are a lot more risk aware right now. And they see that it's tied to not only the traditional buckets that we touched on, credit, operational, non-financial risk, but risk now starts to span processes, events, right? And understanding how this comes together, you know, across regions and across the globe is absolutely key. that's driving another trend in being able to now use not only the analytics we talked about, not only big data, but the ability to go back and map and monitor processes, right? The controls you have in those processes, right? The regulations associated with those processes. And then how does human behavior affect that, right? Being able to actually grab maybe, and I don't know if somebody's coined a term, you know, but there's something beyond big data that actually gets into this next level of data, capturing that, monitoring that. That's actually a very significant change. Because the systems will change, right? Not only do the cloud adoption, but the fact that we thought we had big data, I think we're going to get, you know, something bigger than big data here in the next 3 to 5 years.
Interesting perspective. And I'll toss out one thing. I appreciate you hinted at this is I've much appreciated this semester you doing what we term the sidekick in the capstone course, helping guide the students along in their presentations and such. That's a great way to give back a little bit. And I know the students in the class have appreciated your input. And I'd encourage people in general to consider just reaching out. Universities are always looking for professionals who are willing to give a little time to help students out. And that's how they're going to get the skills that we need, as if we're there to help tell them. So anyway, thanks for that. And thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be on the show.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Bill. Yeah.
Okay. Well, talk to you soon.
Great. Thank you.